Joining me now in the studio, the executive director of Summit Land Conservancy, Cheryl Fox. Good morning.
Good morning.
So final days to raise, how much are you down to?
Right now we are at $740,000 left to raise, so we're going in the right direction. We do have two challenge grants, each for $50,000, trying to find some people who will match those challenge grants. And we have decided to take a page from KPCW's book and offer some incentives for people who want to make a contribution. You know, we are down to the wire on this. I would like to say a huge thank you to all of the listeners who called in last week during the Summit Land Conservancy Hour on KPCW. That helped us raise another $5,000 to save the farm, as well as help KPCW out. So that was an exciting evening. And a huge thank you to everybody for that one. But we are in the final 3 weeks at this point. So, you know, we do think that we will make it. We are talking to an awful lot of people. We hope that people who have been sort of waiting to see if we're going to get close will decide to say, all right, it's time. You know, it is a hard deadline, March 31st. So, and if we have not raise the money by March 31st, we will have a very difficult conversation, I think, with the family. Because, you know, they've already extended us once for a full year, and that cost them an awful lot of money to do. And at some point, you know, there's a diminishing rate of return, and they will have to make a different decision. So it's not the decision they want to make. So we really hope that people will help us out.
We're talking about the 158 acres there, just off of Old Ranch Road. It's the Oscarthorpe Ranch, right?
That's right. I jumped right into that.
Yeah, yeah. Again, you have a full-page ad, you know, with big notice, you know. So who's paying for that?
The Summit Land Conservancy is paying for that. So, you know, we have, it costs a little money to raise money. So we are paying for full-page ads in the paper. We are paying for ads on KPCW. We are working really hard to try to find other sources of information. So we, in December, we sent a letter to every Park City address. The Conservancy paid for that. We are, you know, there are people who are sending letters to their neighbors. That we're not really paying for that. But, you know, that's what we do, right? The Summit Land Conservancy saves land. So when people support our organization, part of what they do is, you know, all of the background things that has to happen to go into this. I will say that the federal government, our partners in this transaction, have been moving very quickly, and the appraisal has been approved, the conservation easement has been approved. So, I mean, we're really in the last hours of this, and we need to be able to come to the table.
So I've heard that people living along Old Ranch Road there haven't contributed. Is that true?
That is not true.
Everybody around there has?
You know, I won't say everybody. Everybody. You know, some people just won't. Some people can't. But I will say that we have seen amazing, incredible, and huge contributions from all of those neighbors and those neighborhoods. So, you know, there are probably a few people there who might be waiting to see if we get a little bit closer. And I hope they will decide to join with their neighbors. At this point, you know, we have over 800 individuals who have given money to this transaction. And I hope people will say, you know, if that many of my friends and neighbors want to see this saved, I do too, and I'll help.
Yeah, but I mean, think about it. We've got a lot more than 800 people living in the Snyderville Basin. I mean, that doesn't seem like a lot of people to me.
Well, when you think about households, right? Yes, you're right. There's 25,000 people, but there's, you know, maybe a third of that in terms of maybe 8,000 households. So if we've got 10% participating, when you figure that, when you look at, you know, how fundraising goes, out of every 10 people, only 7 will give. And out of those 7, only 3% will give to the environment. So, you know, people are giving to, I talked to a guy last week, and he is donating to help us save the Oscarthorpe farm, but he's also donating to stop childhood leukemia. You know, there are a lot of good causes, and I understand that. So we're grateful that people support all kinds of good causes in this community, but if they've got some money to help us save open space, we certainly need it.
Yeah. Are we tapped out?
I guess
everything from Bonanza Flat to Treasure Hill to Snow Ranch Pastures, now the Oscarthorpe Ranch. I mean, is it?
I don't know that I can answer that question, and it doesn't really matter. If we're tapped out and we lose $8 million in federal funding, $4 million in landowner donation, and about $4 million in other money that we've already raised. You know, for the last 3%, are we really that tapped out? I think that the people who are super committed and super on board have given already, yes. Many of them are giving again. We're seeing second, third, and fourth gifts coming in at this point. So we do have some incentives. We're offering our Summit Land Conservancy cool brand jackets. Bill White Farms has donated some gift cards. So, for a $5,000 donation. People are welcome. Probably the easiest way to find out about those incentives is to call the Summit Land Conservancy's office, and you can visit wesaveland.org to find all those numbers.
Okay. Does it feel competitive, though, with you, since we've got that Snow Ranch Pastures going on at the same time?
No, that's a great question. No, it doesn't. We hope that Utah Open Lands is successful. I know that we've sent emails to our donors who live in the Thames Canyon area to let them know that this is a opportunity. What we're really finding is not so much that people are tapped out, but that they just didn't know. I was at and I don't know why people don't know. There's confusion out there and there's a lot of information out there. And, so sometimes people just miss it. So we hope that people realize the farm is not saved. Neither farm is saved. And we really do have a final push, but we are close, right? $740,000 sounds like a lot of money, but it really can happen pretty fast.
Okay, this is the final time we talk to you before that deadline, so we'll know next month.
Yeah, that's right.
Also, just wanted to mention that you've got the final moonshine event happening for this winter.
That's right. So that's next week, next Wednesday, March 20th. It happens at 7 p.m. at the parking lot at First Time is where people meet. Come with your skins and your headlamps and, your water, and they hike up to the angle station and ski down. It's a really beautiful. The pictures are really beautiful from that event.
So okay.
We do it in conjunction with our friends at Mountain Trails.
All right. Anything else you want to mention?
The Summit Land Conservancy is moving. We have been located in the Chase Bank right next to Jan's and Park Avenue for more than 20 years. There's no external sign, so we call it our top secret world headquarters. But we will be moving in actually with our friends at Mountain Trails over in the old Instacare. So we will be joining them at Club Med.
Okay. Cheryl, thanks.
Busy month.
Well, the Summit County Council meeting in work session at 2 o'clock. Tomorrow at the County Courthouse in Colville, in the studio with a preview of the agenda, County Manager Tom Fisher, good morning.
Good morning, Leslie.
So with 3 days left in this year's legislative session, let's start with Tim Quinn's tax reform bill put on hold for now.
Correct.
Still lots of confusion about it and how it would impact different business sectors. But I guess
still confused.
Yeah. But what I think people need to know is that this only touches the state's portion of the sales tax, right? Anything that the county currently charges is held harmless here?
Well, in the original version, it did include the local option taxes that the county has, as well as cities. So the question is, as this goes back for study and interim, what will that final form be? Certainly there was some compromises trying to be made in order to keep the legislation alive during the session. And one of those was to take out the local options as part of the mix. But I'm not sure what's going to happen in interim.
All right. And also, do you know at this time, are there any bonds that the county has out there, revenue bonds that rely on sales taxes to pay off?
Absolutely. So you'll recall the two transportation taxes that the voters approved in 2016. One of those, four transportation projects, one of them being the Jeremy Ranch Interchange that we're about to get into, we let bonds against that revenue source. So would it have an effect? Yes. The question is how much effect, because we don't know what broadening that base into services does to the revenue picture for us. It's very difficult for us to estimate that because we don't know enough about it at this point.
Yeah. So the bonds are sold, so at least you've got that, but it may mean that you have to extend them if you don't have the same amount coming in?
Yeah, I mean, we'll have to go back and talk to our bond counsel about what that impact would be if that happens. And, you know, I'm sure we've had initial talks with our bond council as this legislation was starting to come forward, you know, because all municipalities, well, not all municipalities, but a lot of municipalities and counties have bonds against local sales taxes. So there's going to be a lot of activity around that as these discussions go on.
Okay. But for now, we're good because it's
absolutely
at least held off for now.
That's correct.
Let's see. There's a bill for sewer improvement assessments. The county supports this. Is that going to happen before the close of the session?
We believe so. And we're very hopeful that that will go through. It's gone through the House already with a unanimous vote. We're just waiting for it to come up on the docket for the Senate. And, of course, this last week is a crazy week, so we'll keep our eye on it.
The Rocky Mountain Power Renewable Energy bill, the staff packet indicates that it still has to get out of public utilities, but I think it did last week.
Last night it got it went through the House with a favorable vote, so now it's on to the Senate. So we'll see again, you know, based on the docket, how soon that comes up and what activity will be around it as far as discussion.
Why is this so important for Summit County to be able to meet its net carbon zero?
Well, it sets up a process with the Public Utilities Commission and rulemaking that would allow renewable sources to be put in place to support 100% renewable in our communities. So both, you know, Salt Lake City, Park City, ourselves all have 100% renewable energy goals, both for government operations and eventually for community-wide. And so this process this legislation starts the process that would allow us to do that. So without this legislation, we really can't work with Rocky Mountain Power effectively and the Public Services Commission in order to get to that goal.
We started years ago talking about net zero carbon emissions. Is that the same thing as 100% renewables?
Well, no. 100% renewables contributes to net zero carbon, and it contributes to lowering that carbon footprint over the overall community. Of course, there's other sources of carbon besides our energy use, but that's a big one.
So what is the goal then? Is it 100% renewable or is it net zero carbon?
For the
emissions?
County, it's 100% renewable energy.
Okay, which I think is different
But then we also have carbon goals as well that are part of a different set of goals.
Okay. Let's see. There is an amusement park safety bill. The county opposes this. I can't believe that.
It sounds counterintuitive because, of course, we're very concerned with safety when we have, especially with the county fair, when we have these kind of operations around. But more it has to do with getting into the legislation and seeing how onerous the permitting process is. And how that would slow down the ability for these vendors to be able to set up and get going when they need to, because they're very, very tight on time as they move between events in the summer. So it's more of a probably working with the bill's author to make sure that actually what they want to achieve can be achieved in the time frames that the vendors have.
So when does this equipment get tested for safety?
Well, it's permitted every year, and I don't know the exact process that it's tested and when, but they are permitted and they are tested for safety. I believe that it's necessary that we have the right process in place for that.
Yeah, and I guess I just, you know, your car's brakes can go out at any time. Mm-hmm. I mean, even though they look good at a former inspection. But we just kind of trust that they're safe.
Well, I mean, certainly part of our contracts when we set up those with those vendors is that they provide an assurance that they're safe. You know, and not that you want an incident to happen to test this, but they're also insured around those things. But, you know, I think it'd be useful to go back with the bill's author and understand what is their motivation for bringing this forward so that we can work with them. And that's often the case with legislation. There's always motivation around it. Someone has been speaking to them about some problem, and sometimes you have to break down the problem to really get good legislation around it.
Scooter electric scooter regulation bill. County still opposes that?
It does, and mostly that's around our ability to work with vendors if they come into our community so that we can regulate. It seems like the legislation is moving towards not allowing some regulation, which would hamper us. It also has some provisions in it about limiting fees that could be charged the vendors. So, you know, in cases around the country where they've seen, say, a city or a county has had to pick up some of these vehicles in order to keep the streets clean and or keep other areas clean. We may not, under this legislation, we may not be able to charge fees around that. And so that would be a cost to the taxpayer as opposed to the vendor who is providing the service and collecting money as a profit-making business.
Okay. Where are we with our moratorium on...
So we're ready to bring it back, except that we were kind of waiting to see what happens with this legislation. So it's we'll see what happens this week, and then we'll go forward.
There's a bill that would add a reason to allow a development moratorium. This new reason could be for a water study. This is something you then agree with?
Well, you know, I think... most legislation that deals with local regulation of land use, we're going to be, as long as it's in favor of the local authority, we're going to be in favor of that. This one seems to be, again, directed towards a fairly specific case study in the state. So I would need to understand a little bit more about that before, you know, I gave an opinion on it. But generally, we would be for something like that.
All right. Elsewhere on the agenda, an amendment to the Silver Creek Voluntary Assessment Area. Looks like good news. You're adding a property owner?
Absolutely. Always good news when we add property owners. I was actually discussing this on email last night to kind of figure out where we're at in the break-even process. My memory serves me doesn't always serve me well, but my memory says that we are at break even, but I'm going to make sure and get you that information before we get to hearing tomorrow.
Okay. Just somebody figured out that it's happening, may as well jump in.
Yeah, I'm not sure of the circumstances, whether they're wanting to do something with their business that would require something with their septic system or not. You know, we really... worked hard to make a good business case around this for this business area to make it worthwhile to hook on to sewer, and we continue to see people wanting to join so that it makes it a better decision and better for our water quality.
Okay, is there ever a point where it becomes too late to join in?
I don't think so. I think that the cost goes up over time because you have to you know, participate at the same level that everybody else did. So maybe it's not overall costs, but it's the upfront hit that you have to take if you're not in early.
Okay. Resolutions recognizing county employees for their service. So with a handful of employees recently retiring, are we filling these positions or are we going to leave them vacant?
We are filling the positions, especially these two. This is a key support position within the Community Development Department. Susan Overd pretty much, you know, of course Pat's in charge, but Susan really runs the place. So she keeps everything moving forward, as a lot of our support personnel do. John is retiring out of our road crew, and he's been spending his time plowing roads, and we absolutely have to have those positions filled in order to service the community.
What about our county historian position?
We are going to fill at some point, but we're just kind of taking the budget process this year to figure out what it is that we want our history department to be doing in the future. Certainly, Navi had a focus on documenting our history through books. That was her specialty. Plus, she did a lot of work on monumenting some of our history throughout the county and leading tours and talking to people about that history. But, you know, history has a whole gamut of other things when it comes to, you know, she also built the museum that's in the basement of the courthouse. And, you know, we don't have right now a good archive of all of the materials that we have. So that could be a future or an early focus of that next person that, that would fill that position. So we're stepping back and taking a look at it first.
Okay, does that museum stay?
Museum's staying.
Okay, you don't need the room.
It's staying where it's at for right now.
Okay. Let's see. An appeal on the application for a cell tower in Woodland voted down by the East County Planning Commission. The debate here mostly about the visibility of the tower and whether that complies with code.
Yeah, so it has to do with, you know, whether it's stealthy enough. And I think the stealth was the word that they used in the staff report. You know, I imagine there's some judgment with that. One of the comments that I saw in the staff report that, you know, there are no 140-foot trees in this area that this could blend in with. And using the kind of a treescape for this tower would be the treatment. So the council needs to look at that and the merits of the appellant to see whether they're going to go a different direction or not.
Okay. Also, an East County ordinance for preservation of historic structures that would allow for adaptive reuse, a lot like what we saw here in the Snyderville Planning Commission's approval to approve a coffee shop for the old store.
Absolutely. I think the East Planning Commission is very excited about this. We have not had very strong code language that helps with the preservation of historic structures. This obviously provides a much better incentive to do that. So they forwarded this up, and the council and the Planning Commission talked about it last week, and they're excited. The council's excited to see it.
Okay, and finally, just a hearing on the lighting regulation ordinances, one for Snyderville, one for the East Side. Any changes to the ordinance to reflect the concerns that were brought up last week by
council?
Well,
I'm not sure. I think that's one of the things that the staff will be talking to the council about as part of their report out this week. I'm waiting to hear about that as well.
Okay. Anything else you wanted to mention?
We have a few boards and commissions open right now for recruitment. I believe ESAP is Agricultural Protection on the East Side. That group is open, as well as some others. So take a look at our website and see if there's something that interests you.
Okay, Tom, thanks for coming in. Well, the Park City Planning Commission meeting in a closed session tomorrow, starting at 5:30. The regular meeting beginning at 6 in the City Council Chambers of the Marsac Building. In studio, I have Bruce Erickson, Planning Director. Good morning.
Good morning.
It seems unusual to have a closed session for Planning Commission. Can you tell us what's up?
I know. It's a closed session. We're going to be discussing some things that need to be discussed with respect to security in the building.
Okay. So, personnel?
No,
property?
No, no.
This
has to do with, you know, we put the new door locks on the Marsac in order to control some ingress and egress during events. And we want to make sure that the Planning Commission is comfortable with how we handle operations in the building when we have meetings. And it's the same thing that we've just been through with the City Council. So I can't discuss the details, but just know that the Police Department wants to make sure that everybody understands what the function is. It's the same reason we wear our badges every day. We want to make sure that our people are secure and comfortable, and the community feels like they understand.
Okay. Planning Commission will be making a recommendation to combine six lots into three lots there on Claim Jumper Court and Thanes Canyon. I don't recall any open lots there on that cul-de-sac.
Well, that's part of the fun of this one. And tomorrow night is going to be Laura Newberry, one of our planner ones, kind of night. She has both items. They're both kind of complicated, but they're kind of different. In this case, this goes all the way back to the 1970s when the golf course was created. The golf course was behind these lots in early Thanes Canyon phase. Over the course of time, Adolph's restaurant used to be in the middle of the golf course. That went away. The golf course was sold to the city, and the golf course was reversed. So the front nine is now the back nine, and the back nine is now the front nine. In the course of all of that, there was some property that could be disposed of behind these lots that used to be an old golf hole. And so what the City Council and the Planning Commission did was create these lots that are called, for example, 68 and lot 68A and lot 67 and lot 67A. And now the homeowners are asking to incorporate those lots into one lot and get rid of the property lines. Over the course of time, the neighbors have had several hard conversations about where the rear yard setback was and how big your house could get. The original application was to move the setback and allow for larger houses. The applicant has since withdrawn that request, and we're going to stay with the existing setbacks but add additional backyards to all the properties in Claim Jumper Court, which is on the west side of Thames Canyon.
Okay. Any news of that home collapse, a roof collapse there in Thames Canyon?
Nothing more other than I know Chief Building Official Thacker has been out to have a review of it. We've taken a look at some of the other roofs that we have in town and some of the other sliding matters we have, especially icicles. What's pretty amazing is the historic houses have the fewest large icicles on them, and some of the new construction where the architects like to have some fun with roofs actually grow icicles and much more snow retention on the roofs. Dave Thacker, the chief building official, was on Channel 2 News the other night talking about the snow shedding issues as well.
Yeah. Let's see, at the last city council member meeting, some members of the public expressed their concern about the historic preservation efforts. We had this week another building up there at the Silver King Mine complex there near Bonanza Chairlift collapse. I know that you've worked hard to make this agreement work, but I mean, is it too little too late? Or
A little bit of that. It might not just be not enough now. Historic preservation is an important thing, and we work very hard to do it. There's a professional discussion going on about whether we're supposed to stabilize things and keep them in a stable condition, or we're supposed to restore everything back to the 1910 era. And that's kind of what we're talking about now and where that money is going to come from. You can see on the agenda that we were going to talk about this with the Planning Commission. What we're going to ask the Planning Commission to do is help us define what standards we should be meeting on all of these structures. We've taken it off the agenda while we have conversations with a couple other people that may be party to the agreement. Because there's some other responsibilities out there that are not parties to the current agreement, so we have to have continued discussions. You know, we're gonna lose structures and we're gonna lose family members, and there's not a lot we can do about it. I think the important thing is to make sure that we stay consistent with our mission, which is to be able to tell our story 25 years from now.
Okay, and the City Council now planning to sell one of the condominiums in Empire Pass that was built as affordable housing, and that until condominium association fees and a big assessment became unaffordable. So when it comes to a planning decision here, I mean, was this a good one to require affordable housing in an area with limited bus service and expensive condominium fees?
Let me go at it backwards for you. The HOA dues and the condominium fees probably were not well considered when we were trying to deal with the social equity issue of having housing in the neighborhoods. On the other hand, having a manager's unit or a caretaker's unit or something like that sort of at the mid-level probably is an appropriate thing if we can manage the costs. We're not talking about a housekeeper or some of the folks that do the work on a daily basis, but an on-site manager is a good idea. And I think we're incorporating that. The city has revised the housing policy and revised the way we write all of our deed restrictions, especially on the ones we have first right of refusal on, to make sure that the owner's fees don't do this again. You'll see it on the one that Planner Whetstone just did. the tower at Talisker Club. There's a housing unit in that one, and there's also a police station in that one, and we've deed restricted those to make sure the HOA dues remain affordable.
So the city's planning now to sell this unit.
Yes.
What needs to happen then to remove that deed restriction?
The city council has that authority. They just need to vote to remove the deed restriction. They'll sell that unit at market price. They'll take that money, including whatever margin there is or profit there is, and buy additional housing units or pay for housing units down here.
Okay. Anything else you want to mention?
No, thank you. Just really quickly, up on 269 Daly, Planner Newberry is also have that one. That one's kind of a fun one for a planner. The house is a landmark house, and it was approved in the past to move. And in exchange for the move, the owners agreed to move the development line. Now we're asking them not to move the historic house and put the line back where it was. The tricky bit is Daly Canyon was almost all a neighborhood of mechanics and woodworkers, and so all of those sheds and garages supported the Ontario Mill and the Marsac Mill, which is different than what you see normally here in Old Town.
Okay. Thanks, Bruce.
Thanks, Leslie.
Bruce Erickson is the planning director for Park City Municipal. You're listening to the Local News Hour on KPCW. KPCW News Time now, 8:45. Good morning. Well, Deer Valley launching its summer concert series for the second year. In the studio with details, I have Darren Pickley with the State House, one of the concert promoters for this. Good morning. Thanks for being with us.
Hi, it's the State Room Presents.
State Room Presents. Thank you. This is the second season that Deer Valley is doing the concerts with your help.
Uh-huh.
And it's you and Chris. Tell me a little about your organization.
Darren, myself, and Chris Motz, my business partner, joined with Deer Valley last year. We've done some concerts in the past up at the beautiful Snow Park Amphitheater. And hi, Colleen.
Good morning.
And so we're really excited about the second season. We announced Michael Fronte and Spearhead and Ziggy Marley a few weeks back. Great advance ticket sales there. And this morning, we just announced three more shows for the series.
Okay, how many are you going to have total?
We're not sure yet. We're going to have a few more.
Okay, because you had five last year, and
we
were thinking you might double that.
No, I don't think it's going to be double.
Not in year two. Gosh,
we're going to be probably around six, maybe seven. Yeah. It really just depends on the organic flow of who's available and what we feel suits the community.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah.
So in addition then to Michael Fronte and Ziggy Marley, who else you got coming and when?
We have, if I can remember this in chronological order, we have indie superstar Jenny Lewis, which is going to be a really great show, indie rock star. That is on Thursday, July 11th. Then we have a little break because the symphony kind of takes over through July. And we have a great co-headline show on Sunday, August 11th with Ben Harper and the Innocent Criminals with Trombone Shorty and Orleans Avenue. So that's going to be really fun on Sunday, August 11th. And Saturday, August 17th, we have another great co-bill with John Butler Trio and Soul Rocker, St. Paul and the Broken Bones, which is a heck of a show. They played the Utah Arts Festival last year.
Oh, did they?
Yeah.
All right, Colleen, so tickets go on sale when?
Tickets are on sale. They go on sale on Thursday, correct?
There's a local presale on Thursday.
Yep.
You should have, most of you listening probably received an email on that. And the public on sale is Friday morning at 10 a.m.
Yep. Yeah, and we're excited. This year, we're going to do some improvements to the venue, too, which will be great for both the artists and our patrons. We're moving the concession stand away from kind of right by the stage and front and center over to the left side. So accomplish a couple of things. Make it more comfortable for our artists. We can grill burgers without annoying smoke blowing on them. And it really makes for a better presentation for our guests, too. Easier to get to in and out. Close to bathrooms, all that good stuff.
Right. You can walk up, get it without having to walk across.
Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah, yeah.
And get it on your way in. It's right there.
Yeah.
All right. Because I know that we had talked last year about the amphitheater needing some improvements. Is that the only one that you're doing? I mean, everything else is...
So far, we have a five-year plan. We do, we do all those fun things that you never notice, like reseeding and... Well, it's on the five-year plan to do some regrading. So to make the kind of upper seats a little more, the rake of the theater.
The slope.
The slope. Easier for viewers in the back.
There's probably a couple other things up the sleeve that you might just have to come to a show to see.
Yeah, we're looking at video boards for this series, too, because we think that that's really important, especially, for those people that do like to sit away from the crowds. And yeah, so lots to be determined on our five-year plan, but we're moving towards it, and for sure the concession stand.
Okay, so when the local tickets go on sale, is that just, you'll just get first dibs at the reserved seating?
And, I mean, all the tickets, yes, but the reserved seating and the GA floor, which if you went to a show last year is kind of like a dance pit up front.
Yeah.
It's really fun. It engages with the artist pretty significantly. You're still allowed to bring blankets and, you know, small coolers in there, just no chairs. So there's a front section that's pretty exclusive that will go on sale with the pre-sale. And then there's reserved seating kind of in between that GA floor and then where the soundboard is. And then that will also be on sale for the pre-sale, and then all the GA lawn. So judging by how it went with Michael Ferrante and Ziggy Marley, those GA floor and reserve seats went awfully quick.
Yeah, they go fast.
So if you're interested in kind of getting up close for the show, definitely 10 a.m. on Thursday is the key time to grab those tickets.
Is it deervalley.com or is it through?
It's deervalleyconcertseries.com.
Mm-hmm. And we've got a link to the
And we have a link on our site, too.
Okay, so you sold out of the reserved and the...
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Yeah, it was great.
That was quick.
It was. Yeah, it was faster than expected, so it feels like that's a good sign of, you know, people having a great experience last year.
Okay, and again, just it's different prices for different areas.
Yep. The GA floor and the reserve, they're both priced the same, and then the GA lawn is usually, you know, half the price, a third less.
Okay, and it just depends on the act in
just
terms of the price.
Just depends on the act and the show, exactly.
Okay. Let's see. You're going to announce then the rest of them, the other two or three when?
You know, that's a good question. I hope in the next few weeks. I mean, we're excited this year. We've been able to get an earlier jump on the series. I think the last year when we sat down and chatted, it was middle of May, maybe?
Yeah, it was. I think we thought it was a great idea to announce everything together. But as it turns out, there's just interest in... our guests wanting to know as we book, right?
So yeah, and tours do and national announces.
Yeah.
So we're hoping to announce a few more shows here maybe in the next 2 to 4 weeks.
Mm-hmm. All right, still just signing contracts and things like that.
Yeah, it just depends on, you know, when things get confirmed. If we get the last few shows locked and loaded, then that'll be the final announce. If it's, you know, potentially one more show and then another show, we just want to offer the community the best opportunity for shows.
Okay, anything else you guys want to mention?
No, excited for the summer. Let's hope we have one.
Hopefully the snow melts by
June. We'll definitely
be
moving snow off the venue this year, yeah.
Okay, Colleen Reardon and Darren Pickley with State Room Presents. Thanks for your time.
Thank you,
guys.
The People's Health Clinic offering a free child's dental clinic later this month. In the studio with details, I have Beth Armstrong, Executive Director of the People's Health Clinic, along with one of the dentists helping out, Ralph Gersio. Good morning to both of you.
Good morning, Leslie. Thank you for having us on this morning.
Yeah, so when and where?
It's going to be at the clinic. It's going to be on March 30th from 8 to 4. And it's a day that we're focusing on children's dental health. And so it's only for children. We opened up originally, I think, 22 spots. Now we have 32 spots that are completely filled. We have a waiting list started. And what this has done is shown us the extraordinary need for dental health care for these kids in our area.
Right. Okay. So just between 8 hours, it's like 4 hours, four patients an hour then, huh?
It looks like the
just
appointments
you?
For each patient will be about 30 minutes. At that point in time, the kids will get an exam. They'll get some cleaning instructions. And hopefully we'll be able to provide, if applicable for each child, a fluoride treatment. At this point, most dental disease is completely preventable. And I think if you get to children early enough, you can teach them how to take care of themselves and then prevent problems later on. So I've got to, you know, really give Beth and the staff at the People's Health Clinic some credit for putting this together. I think you can start off early with children, teach them really what they need to do to take care of themselves.
Yeah.
Understand maybe later in the summer there might be an adult day, which would be great.
We are definitely starting working on an adult dental day, and that one we're going to try and get 10 chairs. We're hoping to do over 100 visits on that day, and we're in the process of getting that plan now. So that'll be at the end of the summer.
Okay. So, kids, what's the worst problem you see in children's teeth? Taking care of them?
For most children who don't have the opportunity to go to the dentist, then dental decay can start very quickly. And if children don't learn to care for the teeth or their parents aren't educated on how to help out, then problems can develop. I think early screening and instruction will really be valuable.
Yeah, a lot of it, though, I mean, just leaving a bottle in their mouth or feeding them sugar drinks.
Well, that's the baby bottle syndrome is a very nasty process. Children go to sleep with milk or anything, juice, anything other than water. The sugar in those items, milk has sugar in it, fruit juices have sugar in it. There's bacteria, plaque left on teeth. Decay can go very quickly. Fortunately, we don't see too much of that anymore. I think that children tend to, I think a lot of parents are educated about that, but if it's something that can be a huge problem, that can occur real quickly.
Okay, so you do this as a volunteer?
I am. Yeah, I live here part-time. I live in New Hampshire for most of the rest of the year. I volunteer there. And I contacted Beth about a year ago to see what I could do to help out here at the People's Health Clinic. And I think that it's a service that needs to be provided to the community.
Yeah. Again, so the slots are filled up.
Right.
And are they just from existing patients of yours? Or
no, we do a lot of outreach in the community. And Patty Garcia, our outreach and resource coordinator, has whenever she's at events, she'll talk about the dental health. And she has parents that have been coming up to her and signing up. Probably half of them are our existing patients that whenever their parents or they have come into the clinic over the past 2 months, they've shown signs of needing some dental work more than what we can do in the office. Because, you know, we do offer some assistance with cleaning and instruction on how to brush, but nothing like this.
Yeah. So what happens if they need more?
I mean, well, there's a referral system that's been set up. I think the Epic Promise is providing some funds. Beth has a couple of other dental practices. As part of the Children's Dental Day, they'll be doing an exam and a screening. And if we do identify some significant problems, then there are some dentists in the community who will step up and help take care of these kids.
Okay. Right. Real quick, I wanted to ask you, Beth, any legislative issues that you're watching as we see the legislature wind down?
You know, the ones that were most pertinent to us that I was watching in the first one to hit was the Medicaid expansion and the repeal of that through SB 96. And, you know, that was passed by Senator Christensen, and he pushed it through immediately. So there was nothing we could do about it. Waiting to see what that'll look like and if CMS will approve it. And if it does, then what effects and how we'll handle the rollout of that, but that we won't see that till next year, the effects from SB 96. I did want to mention that we have the volunteers that we have coming in to help for Dental Day is University of Utah Dental School, Dr. Garcio, Dr. Brandon Bailey. We also have a few dentists from Mountain High Family Dental and Orthodontics that are coming in to assist us. We have obviously the Vail Epic Promise Grant. Starbucks is donating us coffee for the morning, and the Midvale Clinic, where Brett Armstrong is the co-director, is going to provide us with the supplies for the day. So we thank all of our volunteers, and especially our volunteer dentists who are giving a lot of time to this project.
Okay. Dr. Garcia, Beth Armstrong, thanks for your time this morning.
Thanks, Leslie.